I had told Victor, he sent us slides earlier today. He had three songs. I'm like, one more, Victor. Just one more, just in case. How's everybody's week going?
Pretty good.
Besides being a little bit cool, you didn't have to bring Chicago weather down. I am fine without that. I'm glad you left that there. I know I talked to my parents. My parents live in North Texas. They always catch it before we get it here. Always. I keep telling them, I was like, y'all need to close the window. Because what they get up there, I mean, I grew up in up there for years. And this is just a different cold here. You know, dry cold, windy, one thing. This cold just seeps into your bones. All right, so continuing on through our book that we'll be going through, Living Like Jesus. This evening, the portion of Jesus's ministry that we're going to look at the most, or we're going to focus on, is how he accepted other people. And how what we can take from his time on this earth as he worked with other people and worked to just improve their lives. So starting off here, have a little story. Mary lived a hard life. She married at 24 after having the first wedding to this wildcat called off almost 2 years earlier. Life's not easy on any family, and hers was no exception. Work kept her husband away from home a lot of the time. She had four sons, but only one lived to be an adult. Mary's husband spent a lot of time arguing with others. A lot of these arguments he lost. But with each loss, he learned and he grew in his abilities. As their marriage continued, her husband sought more prominent roles. Unfortunately, this started out rough for him, as well as he lost multiple opportunities to rivals. Mary's husband stuck to his beliefs. Eventually, this allowed him to become more popular with those putting individuals in positions. He received a great invitation, couldn't turn it down. As he started putting together supporters, he ensured that his rivals were also part of that group. His acceptance of others is well noted in history. We'll get back to marrying her husband at the very end. But just that brief snippet of this, of Mary and her husband's life, is kind of a mirror, not a mirror, but an example of what we also see from Jesus. Jesus didn't just push people away. He looked to find ways to do more with them. As humans, we tend to emphasize the differences, you know, and that's not just a today issue. I mean, unfortunately, today, politics is a big thing, and everybody's going to be talking about who did you vote for, what are the, you know, why, what party are you part of. There's so many divisive natures for this country right now. But that's not just today. I mean, unfortunately, I mean, every generation says this is the worst it's ever been, right? Is this the worst it's ever been? I can't say that. For the church, I believe it's not. I mean, the church in the first century went through much worse than what we're going through right now. In the first century, you know, they had the same issues, politics and religious and race issues that we see still happening today. You know, religious leaders of the time of Jesus worked to emphasize this division. You know, one of the groups that did that was the Pharisees. The Pharisees, that name is meant separate ones. The Pharisees did what they could to separate themselves from everybody else. If they didn't like somebody, they didn't like their occupation, they didn't like their background, the Pharisees did what they could to push them away. And of course, that's where Jesus ran into issues with the Pharisees in a lot of cases, because that was the exact opposite of what Jesus was trying to do and what Jesus was trying to teach. You know, Luke 15, 1 and 2 says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to him, and the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.'" You know, Jesus states his intentions clearly. We see in Matthew 9, 10 through 13. "As Jesus reclined at the table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were reclining with Jesus and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to the disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" But when he heard it, when Jesus heard it, he said, "Those who are well have no need for of a physician, but those who are sick, go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I came not to call the righteous, but sinners." In a brief snippet of conversation there, Jesus is trying to prove a point to the Pharisees. He's not calling the Pharisees righteous, but he's saying where his focus lies. You know, we also see him just in another verse that we all know, John 3:16. "For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life." That was Jesus' purpose. You know, we can see even through his disciples, through the men that he chose. These were not men that were necessarily well-liked in the community per se. Yes, they were working men. They were fishermen. But he had a tax collector. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Tax collectors definitely were not a favored group of individuals within the Israel during that time frame. But Jesus never strived to be favored among men. That was never his focal point. He didn't focus his time meeting with government officials or with the religious leaders. If they invited him, he did. But he didn't go out and try to meet with the Roman politicians or the Pharisee leaders or whoever the religious leaders that were there in the temple. But why? Would he not have made a greater impact there? If you get the Pharisees to change their mind and to start to believe what Jesus is teaching, does he not make a greater impact? It's possible. But I think we can also see and just take a quote from J.R.R. Tolkien, of course, is many years, centuries later than Jesus. One of his famous quotes is, "Not all who wander are lost." But that's just the portion of that quote. That's the one we all know, "Not all who wander are lost." But the whole quote says, "All that is gold does not glitter. Not all who wander are lost. The old that is strong does not wither. Deep roots are not reached by the frost." The Pharisees wanted to glitter. They wanted to stand out. They're the ones that were talked about that stood on the street corners and prayed so they got the attention. What Jesus is looking for is for those that are searching. The Pharisees, that would have been a battle with them because they believed that they were no longer searching, or they were searching for something different than what Jesus was giving. The political leaders of that day, they were not searching. They were trying to please Rome. They had no intention to try to understand a different religion that was starting up in their area. But the people, and that's who we're going to talk about today, the people were searching. They had a hole. They needed hope. And I think that's what we can kind of see today. I started doing some thinking over the holiday time frame about, you know, a lot of these news articles that we see, especially that from the last probably 2.5-3 years during COVID. The amount of people, the amount of celebrities, the amount of people who were, you would think were fine, are not fine. I mean, if we look at the end of the 2010, so 2018, 19, 20, through COVID, the suicide rate in the U.S., alone has jumped tremendously. So if you look on Facebook, you look on TikTok, you look on Instagram, whatever it might be, people are saying they're fine. But they're not fine. Just as the people in the New Testament, in Jesus' time, they weren't necessarily saying they were fine. They were reaching and crying out for help, because they didn't have hope. And today, we have a society that bases their attention and their lives on things that are not going to fill the hole that Jesus can fill. So we're going to go through about 4 different instances this evening. We should have time. When Jesus talked with, sat down with, met with individuals, and changed their lives for the sole reason that he was willing to accept them as they are and give them hope that they needed. So first one's Bartimaeus. Who's Bartimaeus? Anybody know? He was blind. That is correct. We see Bartimaeus in Mark chapter 10, starting in verse 46. It says, "And they came to Jericho," as Jesus and his disciples, "and he was leaving Jericho with his disciples and a great crowd. Bartimaeus, a blind beggar, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside. And when he heard that Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, 'Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me.' And many rebuked him, telling him to be silent." I think that's key. These people who were surrounding Jesus, the crowd that was surrounding Jesus as he left Jericho, probably knew Bartimaeus. They probably walked by him almost every day if they went through that part of the city, out of that gate. And they ignored him every day. So Bartimaeus says, and he cried out all the more. Oh, and Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." And they called him, he sprang up, and he came to Jesus. And Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And the blind man said to him, "Rabbi, let me recover my sight." Jesus said to him, "Go your way, your faith has made you well." And immediately he recovered his sight, and he followed him on the way. How many times in our lives do we have someone, and I know this happens more, I can see this happening more for our kids in school, where there's somebody in their class that a few other kids are making fun of for whatever reason. A handicap, they're just different. And it's easy through peer pressure to not necessarily join in, but not to do anything about it. To just let it be. Jesus didn't just let it be. He stopped. He could have kept going, but he stopped. And he went beyond what the crowd wanted, because the crowd's trying to silence this person that's annoying them, and they're afraid is annoying Jesus. But he called him over, and he understood what Bartimaeus was asking. And by Bartimaeus' faith, he healed his blindness. You know, talking about Bartimaeus there, he was, you know, in Jewish society, Bartimaeus was probably at the bottom. He was a beggar, so he was already in a bad position there, right? But he's blind too. You know, many thought that blindness was a punishment from God. You know, we even see this from Jesus' disciples. John chapter 9, verses 1 and 2. Says, and he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" It was the thought in Jewish society that handicaps such as blindness was punishment from God. So not only is this person a beggar, he's probably a beggar because he is blind. There's a good chance of that. Because it's hard to work if you can't see in a lot of cases. People just looked down on him. They definitely didn't accept him. They just wanted to walk on by. You know, I've said this to my girls. You know, I've said it in conversations. Can you see the forest through the trees, right? You know, are we seeing the big picture because we're focusing on the tree that's in front of us? But then the question I have to think of as I'm reading through this class and reading through Jesus' interaction with Bartimaeus here is, it's not that we should just look for the forest. It's not that we should just look at the trees. We got to see both. Jesus saw both. Bartimaeus was a tree right there in front of him. The bigger for the forest is Jesus' plan. Salvation is the forest. We need to make sure that we're looking at the details of our life, the details of our interactions with people that are around us, our friends and our family and our coworkers, because they are the trees. And we need to help them move to the forest that Jesus laid out for us, salvation. You know, the reason that it's important for us to see the trees and the forest, you know, 2 Peter 3, verse 9, the Lord is not slow to fulfill His promise as some count slowness, but patient towards you, not wishing that any should perish, but that all should reach repentance. That's it. No one perishes. Everybody makes it. Some people are harder to get that point than others. The thing is we can't just, because somebody is different due to, as in the case of Bartimaeus, due to a handicap, due to the fact that society believes that that person is not as worthy, doesn't mean we think the same way. We've got to have the mind of Jesus when we're looking at individuals like that and work with them to help them move into the forest, help them move towards salvation. So moving on to the next person here. This one I know we all know. We sing a song of a wee little man. Zacchaeus, right? Zacchaeus also considered an outcast, but considered an outcast for a different reason. What was Zacchaeus' profession? Tax collector. The Jewish people despised him, so he was a socially outcast. The religious, the Pharisees despised him, so he was not allowed in the synagogue, so therefore he was also a religious outcast. You know, I was kind of looking to do, just doing some research as far as how tax collectors were really kind of viewed in the time of Jesus. I came across a website that kind of helped me refer back to some writings from, they were texts that were vows to Judaism. The one I found was called a Nedarim. In it, there's a few things it talks about with tax collectors. Tax collectors were placed alongside murderers and robbers. That's where they're considered. The rabbis taught that tax collectors were disqualified witnesses in court, societal outcasts, and utter disgraces to their own family. The rabbis also excommunicated tax collectors from the synagogue. They weren't allowed to exchange money at the temple treasury. And finally, the rabbis also considered it lawful to lie in almost any conceivable way to avoid paying tax collectors. Not for sure if they quite saw Jesus' teachings as far as give to Caesar what is Caesar's and God what is God's. But yet we have the story of Zacchaeus, right? Luke chapter 19. Starting the first verse, it says, he entered Jericho and was passing through, and behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. He was seeking to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. Jesus came to the place. He looked up and he said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. So he hurried and he came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all grumbled. Pretty much most of the New Testament, when Jesus is traveling around, he's surrounded by a crowd. You know, first century paparazzi. Some were there to learn, some were there to catch him in the act of doing something that they were trying to pin on him later. The crowd says, you know, he has gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold. Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. So a couple things there. First thing we see from Zacchaeus is he does two things that pretty much every Jewish man of that day would not do. He runs. He's in the crowd. He knows he needs to get ahead of the crowd because he has to find some way to see Jesus. He runs. Jewish men did not run. Beyond that, being that he was a man, even though he was a short in stature, he climbed a tree. I can tell you the last time I climbed a tree, I was in college. I wouldn't do it anymore. I guess I know the consequences too much if I don't make it out of that tree the way I went up it. But he runs and he climbs a tree. And the crowd's going by with Jesus. And the thing that I find impressive with Zacchaeus is he doesn't shout. He doesn't bring attention to himself. He's just trying to see. Who is this man that everybody's talking about? He's wanting to see. Another piece we can see from the story, Jesus was looking. He had all these people around him that were begging for his attention. They wanted to be noticed. And yet Jesus looks over the crowd, up a tree, and sees Zacchaeus. And of course, we saw the crowd is two reasons. I mean, they got overlooked, so their feelings got hurt. And he's going to meet with the sinner. But yet, did anybody in that crowd consider themselves sinners? I mean, it doesn't say, but I'm guessing that they probably weren't perfect either. But yet, Zacchaeus is well known because he's a tax collector. He's the chief tax collector, so he's known. He's the worst of sinners. He's like a murderer. He's a robber. The crowd didn't see the value of why does he get it and we don't. You know, and we'll see this in the next story as well. Jesus has an advantage over us. Granted, he can see the heart of the individuals that he's dealing with. It's not always the case for us. Easily, somebody can fool us by their actions. And B, somebody completely different than we expect. But Jesus sees beyond that. We cannot use that as a handicap ourselves, though, not to be accepting of other people. We still have to be open. You know, the statement, as I read through this, and I've read the story, okay, how many times? I was reading through it again this time. And I had to kind of question, because in the ESV, the way that Zacchaeus' statement is worded, I have to question, did Zacchaeus already do these things that he's saying, or was he going to begin doing these things that he's saying? You know, so Zacchaeus says, "Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold." It's almost past tense to an extent. And I'm not an English major, so please don't hold me to that. But the way I read it is that I can almost see it as Zacchaeus already does these things. Zacchaeus is a good person, even though he's in a job that he does his job. But he does it right. A lot of tax collectors the reason tax collectors got a bad reputation is because they found ways to cheat the system. They found ways to cheat the people. If you had a wagon full of grain coming in and they stopped you and says, "You have 400 pounds of grain here, but you only have 200 pounds. You can't argue with them, and you have to pay the taxes for 400 pounds of grain." It's the way the tax collectors made their money. They skimmed off the top. Of course. I mean, I don't like paying taxes to the IRS if I don't have to. But at least they're going by whatever laws are in place. The tax collectors made their own laws. And then also, if somebody stopped a person that was bringing goods in 2 miles down the road, another tax collector could stop them again later. There's nothing that stopped them from getting taxed multiple times. The people somewhat had a reason to not like tax collectors. But it doesn't mean that all tax collectors are bad. And I think it's something we can see here. Just because certain individuals, whether it's groups of individuals or a profession, or if it's a political affiliation, doesn't mean we agree with them all the time. Doesn't mean they're all bad. It means we have to get to know the person. We have to know the person. We have to understand their heart. Because if we don't understand their heart, then how do we know who they really are? How can we be truly accepting of them? You know, it's not always those that are asking for the attention that need the acceptance. Just as Zacchaeus, it is sometimes those that are not asking for attention that need acceptance. I mean, to an extent, I feel that we're lucky here because we still are fairly, you know, we're growing. And I hope to continue that we grow and we spread the word here in Fulcher. But we pretty much know everybody that's here. Is there any time on a Sunday morning when you look around and there's someone sitting over in a corner and kind of just being by themselves? You know, we should reach out to that person. You know, is there a visitor that's on the back row? And they're on the back row because they're not for sure and they're wanting to jump out as soon as services are over. And that's one thing that's been great about this church since Bonnie Holland days. I think Yusuf calls it the swarm. If there's a visitor here, they're probably not getting out without multitude of people trying to talk to them. We got to keep that. Some people just don't look for the attention. They don't want to be at the front. They just want to kind of do their thing. But they do. Doesn't matter if somebody just wants to sit on the side and support everywhere that they know how and that they feel comfortable with, we need to make sure that they feel accepted. Jesus wants them to be accepted. Moving on to our third person, Simon the Pharisee. We see the story of him in Luke 7. It's interesting. There's a story in Luke 7, then there's also stories of Simon the leper that is very similar in, I believe it's Matthew and John. But it's two different instances from everything I can read and tell. But we see in Luke chapter 7, verse starting in verse 36, one of the Pharisees asked Jesus to eat with him. He went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table, and behold, a woman of the city who was a sinner, when she learned that he was reclining at the table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of ointment, and standing behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears, wiped them with the hair of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with the ointment. Now when the Pharisee who invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would have known who and what sort of woman this is who is touching him, for she is a sinner. Jesus answering said to him, Simon, I have something to say to you. And he answered, say it, teacher. Jesus says, a certain money lender had two debtors. One owed 500 denarii, the other 50. When they could not pay, he canceled the debt of both. Now which one of them will love him more? Simon answered, the one, I suppose, for whom he canceled the larger debt. And he said to him, you have judged rightly. Then turning toward the woman, he said to Simon, do you see this woman? I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet, but she has wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but from the time I came in, she has not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she has anointed my feet with ointment. Therefore, I tell you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But he who is forgiven little loves little. And he said to her, your sins are forgiven. Then those who are at the table with him began to say among themselves, who is this who even forgives sins? And he said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. I mean, we got two different extremes here. I mean, we got the Pharisee, who believes himself to be separate from the rest of the people due to his religious, where he believes he stands religiously. We got a woman who is a known sinner. No, it says that she was a woman of the city. She was known. As soon as she walked in the door, he knew who she was. And yet Simon tried to use her to test Jesus. And yet Jesus turned it right around. You know, the Simon's, he had it wrong. I mean, The way he treated Jesus from the very beginning when Jesus came into his house, Simon was not inviting Jesus to come to a friendly dinner, per se. A friendly dinner, there's certain courtesies that you would do for individuals that came into your house. Generally, you'd greet the guest with a kiss. We see Jesus saying that Simon never did that. You'd also provide water for washing the feet and oil for anointing the head. We see from Jesus' statement, Simon didn't do that. Jesus was a guest, but he wasn't necessarily welcome. You know, at the beginning, from what we can tell, Jesus ignored that. He wasn't going to let that be the problem to inhibit the discussion that he was going to have with Simon. But as soon as Simon was trying to bring up the woman and say that her sins was greater than his, more or less, Jesus brought it up, says, yes, she sinned. But you're not doing right either. You know, the woman was guilty of sins in the flesh, but what we see from Simon is he was guilty of sins of the spirit, per se. You know, he had a critical attitude. He had a hard heart. He saw the woman, and there was no redemption for her. She was not even on his radar as someone that he was going to work to save, even according to his beliefs. In the end, we see Jesus lets the woman know that her faith is valued. Her faith brought her to perform the actions that she did. And even being ridiculed by those at the table, she didn't stop. Her sins were forgiven that day. Jesus was able to look into her heart. There's a chance. Jesus was in the city. There's a chance that she heard him speaking at some point before he came to Simon's house. She knew that he was teaching something different than what she heard before, because she had to do something about it. Coming in with the tears. She was submitting herself to what he was teaching. And she didn't care what other people said. You know, and not so much thinking about how we accept others at this point, but from my own personal point of view, sometimes the hardest person that I find to accept is myself. We know our own faults. Even though we work on them, we know where we struggle. We know when we fall down. We have to be like the woman and not care what others say and not even care how we feel about ourselves. We need to accept ourselves to be able to fully submit ourselves to Jesus. We can't allow self-doubt to stop us. We have to be able to reach out. Final person we'll look at tonight, the Samaritan woman at the well, we see in John chapter 4. Starting in verse 4, it says, "And he had to pass through Samaria, so he came to a town of Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, so Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well, and it was about the sixth hour, so it was about noon. A woman from Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, 'Give me a drink.' For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, 'How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria?' For Jews had no dealings with Samaritans." The story goes on, and we know that Jesus talks to her, and she eventually believes, and we'll kind of go through those steps, that she understands who Jesus is. But towards the end, after his interaction with her, the disciples come back. John 4, in verse 27, it says, "Just then his disciples came back, and they marveled that he was talking with the woman, but no one said, 'What do you seek?' or 'Why are you talking with her?'" You know, the first things first here, he was in Samaria. He was taking a road that was normally traveled between the cities he was in already. Some Jews would actually believe in that Samaritan was so much of an outcast, just even region, that they would walk the long route around it so not to even enter Samaria. But Jesus was walking through it with his disciples. You know, Samaritans were considered outcasts by the Jews due to the bloodlines. The bloodlines, they were mixed between Jewish and Gentile. and that alone considered them outcast. And it was what's even worse is that they were considered outcast by both the Jews and the Gentiles. They were kind of on their own. No one wanted to deal with them. They did have their own religious system that competed with the claims of the Jews, and they did believe in the coming of the Messiah. So they did pull from the Jewish religions or Jewish religious beliefs in their own. But with the dealing of Jesus with the Samaritan woman, we see there's about four different stages that she goes through in her beliefs as she's dealing with Jesus. You know, first off, she's surprised. She's a Samaritan woman that's going out to the well at noon. And what that tells us right there itself, most of the time when women went out to get water from the well was in the morning or in the evening because it's cooler. She's out there at noon, which already tells you there's a possibility that she is not welcome company among some other individuals that are in her town. But even beyond that, she's surprised now that a Jew is even talking to her, because Jews, especially Jewish men, don't talk to Samaritan women. And Jesus continues to talk to her, and she comes to a conclusion as he's talking to her about the living water. And she asks him, she asks him for that water which will keep her refreshed and satisfied, but she doesn't fully understand what that is yet still. But she knows to ask. She's curious. After which Jesus talked to her about her sins. You know, who's your husband? They have multiple husbands. She calls him a prophet. Jesus is showing her that her own desire for satisfaction and her own desire is for satisfaction, and it's also the emptiness of her own faith. Finally, through the knowledge that Jesus has of her past, her eyes are open. She realizes that Jesus is the Messiah. She proclaims that there, and she goes back into the city, and she starts telling people. And we see. She goes back and sees. She starts telling everybody else, and everybody else starts coming out because they're like, what is she talking about? Verse 39, we see many Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me all that I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they asked him to stay with them, and he stayed there 2 days, and many more believed because of his word. Jesus doesn't let preconceptions change the way he feels about somebody. He's willing to accept. He's willing to give them the chance to prove that they want to follow him. You know, Jesus didn't care what others thought about the people he associated with. He knew his purpose. He was going to fulfill that goal every chance he got. He was going to add more trees to his forest. That's his goal. If somebody had a handicap such as Bartimaeus, Jesus looked beyond that, got to know him and his faith. Healed Bartimaeus, blindness because of his faith. When somebody looks different than us, what do, you know? Do we approach or do we hold our distance? We need to think of Jesus as he looked over the crowd for Zacchaeus. Merely by showing that he cared for Zacchaeus, he reemphasized Zacchaeus' faith. Trying to think how many years ago now. 25 years ago, about. I just graduated college, got my first job, looking for my second job more or less. Got a job in retail. Spent many years in retail. Might have been one of the best things that ever happened to me. I would not be standing up here today if not for retail. My personality during high school and college was I was the person sitting on the corner hoping no one sees me so I can go ahead and leave at the end of service. Introvert through and through. Still today, struggle with it. If you ever had a chance to work in retail, you know exactly what I mean. You cannot be an introvert in retail. It does not work. You have to learn to talk to people. It helped me to understand how to get beyond my own fears in front of others, how to accept where I had deficiencies and work on those in front of others, and to get better at that, to have the ability to talk to other people. So I can see where those on the edges, I know where they're at. We all know someone like that. We all know someone that we can relate to that maybe they don't necessarily feel like they're being accepted. And if we don't know somebody today like that, where we're at right now, with this community that's around us right now, there'll be somebody here eventually. More than likely, sooner than later. That's coming to visit and not for sure what it's going to be like. And how are they going to feel? Are they going to feel accepted? Or are they going to feel like no one really noticed me? I have to believe, based on what I know of this church, that there's a better chance of feeling accepted, but we can't even allow the one to go unnoticed. Everyone needs to understand what we feel from Jesus and His love. Everyone needs to know they can be accepted here. When someone does something that we don't agree with, do we immediately jump to a conclusion? I'm bad at that. We have to understand the heart of the person to make the proper response. I have a quality EHS manager at work. There were many times during the whole COVID pandemic that, man, we just had to shut our doors from each other because we were done dealing with each other. But it really made us work better together as a team because we understood where everybody was coming from. I knew his reasoning, he knew mine. You know, accepting people from outside the church is one thing, but the other thing we got to consider is that we have to accept people that are inside the church here. Our brothers and sisters that are already here, we have to accept. We cannot hold a grudge against a brother or sister. It's not part of the plan. It's not what Jesus wants. We got to be willing to accept other people, understand they have faults, understand our own faults, but be willing to work together to get stronger. That's the peace. It's all about getting stronger. It's all about understanding that everybody's different than we are some way, but we can still work together towards our goal, the goal that Jesus put out there for us, the hope that is out there through salvation. We can work towards that together because we know what the Scripture says. We got to do that. That's where we got to work at. Wrapping it all up, at the couple things. So first thing, there's going to be individuals that come into this building that I've already kind of talked about that are not going to look like us, that are going to have some different views of things than us. We have to have the ability to work with them, get to know their hearts, and show them what we know from Scripture. That way they can accept us and they can accept Jesus, be part of this church. But when it comes to accepting others, we just can't go in blindly. We have to get to know them. Just because I meet somebody on the street doesn't mean I accept them. I don't invite them necessarily into my house without knowing them. Gotta know them. Same thing with this church. We gotta know them. We gotta know each other. We gotta know our brothers and sisters that are in other churches. Doesn't matter if you're in Chicago, Katy, Rosenberg, Houston, doesn't matter. We need to know our brothers and sisters. They're all part of the church. Final piece here. I'm going to finish off the story about Mary. So finishing off with Mary, kind of. Even after Mary's husband achieved the most prominent role in their lives, things didn't go well. In his role, he battled both internal and external most of the time that he was in that position. There were more bad days than good. His country was at war. The people that he was responsible for were dying. But with his acceptance of others, including his rivals, he was successful. He brought his country back together. His recognition for a speech is only overlooked more by the way he died. The speech was the Gettysburg Address. Mary's husband preferred to be called Lincoln, while his nickname was Honest Abe. Mary simply knew him as Abraham Lincoln. There's a great book about him called Team of Rivals. When he was elected to office, he went out and found the people that would disagree with him, and he accepted them because he knew they would make him stronger. He wasn't looking for the yes man. He was looking for the right man. Jesus is looking for the right person too. We, and I believe we are the right people. We need to make sure we share that with other people. We need to make sure we accept other people. That's it. Thank you all very much for your attention.